Hoi there, Ome, and welcome back to the Hard Knock Sorority Podcast, a Shadowrun 4th Edition Actual Play Podcast. Jander on over here and take a listen to a short teaser slash filler before we launch into Season 2, which I promise is on its way. In this short interlude, Ollie and Grace spend some time together and explore their relationship. An arms deal is done, and someone starts a fight by whispering, "Poopy head." Featuring Beth as Grace, a.k.a. Nightingale, and Val as Ollie, a.k.a. Boxer. It's really whiz that you are joining us, and I hope you enjoy this episode. If you do, please tell your friends and leave us a positive review. We are available on most podcast services, YouTube, iTunes, etc. You can also find a link to our Discord server in the podcast description and on the YouTube channel. We would love to hear from you, and we share a lot of in-game pay data there as well, such as maps, intros, fluff, and character stories. Please do drop us some feedback. Thank you again, chummers. Don't forget, watch your back. Conserve your ammo. Don't judge a ghoul by their, well, ghoulishness. And never, ever make a deal with the dragon.
So you dial Curie's comlink number, and after a couple of rings, sort of an insulting number of rings, actually, you get the signal that it's been answered, and you can hear his voice over the comlink. Oi, who's this?
This is Boxer.
Who?
Boxer, I still do that shipment of weapons.
Oh, yeah. Cat lady. Right.
Cat lady.
The one with the funny ears and the freaking face mask.
Yes.
I remember you. Can I do for you? You got some more stuff for me to buy?
Not quite. Rather, I have something I would like to buy from you.
Oh, well, do tell. What can I do for you?
Well, for one thing, I have a need for explosives. Fragmentation grenades, to be specific.
Oi, easy enough.
And in addition to this, I have need for a jammer, an area jammer. The quality kind. I'm aware of the price I can pay.
All right, well, you say you want some quality goods, then?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I can do that. Like. It might take me a day or two.
Take your time.
And you've got the Noyan?
Boss.
All right. So, I call you back at this number, then?
Mm. Yes, this is my work number.
All right. Didn't figure you for the sort, but good enough. Business is business.
Indeed.
He signs off.
That fucking man.
Are you guys are hanging out right now, right?
Yeah.
Or has Grace gone back to Pines?
I don't know if Grace would be comfortable going back home yet.
Is she feeling a little bit... tell us about Grace. How is she feeling? Is she feeling... What's her sort of state at the moment?
Is... how do you say... Scared? She's still kind of unnerved about the recent past. She's worried about, like, what has happened recently and what that implies about her future and her safety in the Sixth World.
What specifically is making her worried, then?
If I recall correctly, she knows that there wasn't anyone who was specifically looking for her, right? Or at least she wouldn't know that they were looking specifically for her. But there is quite a conspicuous gap in the media coverage of when they kidnapped Cecile back, which...
Have you done any kind of matrix search regarding that?
Cecile did. And I asked her about it, and she was like, "It's no, Horace, you're not here."
To what extent do you feel that you're... The woman that you know, the young human woman that you know as Cecile, to what extent do you think she's a reliable source of information?
I think she knows how to work computers, and to me, computers are just big black boxes.
Let's see, how would we do this?
If I were to search, I would fail miserably, because I have a -5 to,
I guess do a judge intentions...
0.
So you rolled against Cecile.
Mm-hmm.
You think you have, well, you're pretty sure you have a very good read on this human person. And you're also quite certain that if she did any kind of matrix search, It was mainly about herself.
Maybe I should ask Boxer.
She's quite a self-centered, not self-centered, but she's got a kind of tunnel vision in which her main concern at the moment is herself.
Understandable. I should probably ask Boxer about it then.
Yeah, the chances are that if you got any information from Cecile, it's very much through the lens of what Cecile is concerned with at the moment.
I'm imagining Boxer is, like, making calls when the horse, like, seemingly just appears and is like, "Hey, Boxer! Ollie." Oh.
Yes?
So, you remember whenever you said you'd help me look stuff up on the internet?
On the yes. Matrix?
I've been kind of worried about, what, you remember when we grabbed Cecile? She was, you know, she was looking into the news coverage on what had happened, and, she told me at the time that, that I was conspicuously missing from said coverage, and, I was thinking it might be pertinent to just confirm that if that's true or not.
All right. I'll do a little looking.
Yeah. So, thank you.
Do you have any pertinent skills?
I have a computer.
I mean, most people nowadays would know.
I mean, it's not exactly difficult to search for the Google. It's not exactly hard to find the news.
How much time are you going to spend on this?
No more than a few hours.
Okay. So you spend a couple of hours, and what are you sort of searching? What are your parameters for this search?
She's looking for images, news stories, basically publicly accessible stuff. She isn't really thinking of digging in to, like, Hacker Man stuff.
Okay. You start doing some searches. You're going to spend a couple of hours on this?
Yep.
All right. So how about give us four rolls of computer plus logic. All right, so over the course of 4 hours, you get a total of 6 hits, and you're able to pull up quite a bit of information about the supposed kidnapping attempt and murder of Cecile. The media is still still towing the official line that Cecile, this young researcher at the Evo Labs at Washington University, was forcibly extracted or attempted to be extracted by Shadowrunners, and in the course of the extraction attempt was killed. You do find photos of yourself, although you're not necessarily recognizable. You're on your motorcycle with your mask on the streets, on your motorcycle, and you see find images of the Evo car that has been left at the side of the road, sort of riddled with gunfire and smoking and burning. And you see a nightly report on KSAF of Zach Flash sort of reporting on the incident and giving sort of a synopsis of Cecile's life and lamenting the fact that, you know, Seattle has come to this dire turn where people are just being kidnapped and murdered on the streets. But you don't really find anything that speaks directly to the fact that Grace has been sighted and or otherwise is being looked for.
Well, I don't see anything, so I suppose it's fine.
No, that's a conspicuous hole. That is a conspicuous hole. Because Cecile was moved with magic. She very obviously was levitated. They know there's a mage involved. Is there any mention?
I'm the mage.
There's no mention of magic per se. Just that there was a rather high-profile team of Shadowrunners that had been employed to kidnap Cecile, and there's some speculation as to what the Mr. Johnson for the job might have wanted the research assistant from Evo Labs for, you know, speculation as to why, whether or not Evo is developing some kind of new matrix interface or some kind of magic to matrix interface, considering that Cecile was known to be both a mage, a magically active person, and a matrix prodigy.
Wait, is that even possible?
No.
No, like, that's Grace just saying that out loud. Is that even possible?
You think I know magic computers? Hell if I know. I don't even know about magic.
Okay, a fair point.
Grace, do you have any computer skills?
No.
Okay. You have Arcana, and let's roll Logic and Arcana. Horchata?
You mean Logic and Arcana separately, or Arcana, yeah. Any modifiers?
Look, that's plenty of modifiers right there.
One.
You've got a fairly solid grasp of magic and how magic works, at least your kind of magic. Your knowledge of computers is somewhat more tenuous. Grace probably considers them sort of a type of human kind of magic. But you're fairly certain that the two are not compatible.
Mm. Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. They run on completely different substrates. Magic is alive, and the Matrix is not.
The one place where you think that maybe there might be some crossover is the fact that you know that computers tend to, they work on fiber optics, which is sort of a light interface. So, you could perhaps speculate that there might be some crossover there, but it seems highly improbable.
Yeah. Oh, God.
You don't know that much about human society, do you?
She's been here for a year. I imagine she knows quite a bit, actually. She just doesn't know how to use computers worth a shit.
Yeah, so your understanding probably of the matrix searches that Boxer's done and the sources that she's found that claim that, you know, Cecile might have been working on something for Evo that has to do with computers and magic, it might just be pure sensationalism.
Yeah, that checks out. On that note, heading that aside, still vaguely worried. Not that worried, though.
But there are no... Boxer did not find... There were no images of Grace, and there were no mentions of a van, so...
In my mind, that's the issue. Do you see what I'm pointing at? The fact that it is completely out of the media's wheelhouse, that they haven't said anything about it.
Yeah, they might just not know how to report on it.
Probably fine.
You're probably fine. What could go wrong?
What could go wrong? A lot of things.
Is Grace doing anything? Has Grace got any specific plans for downtime interim?
I want to look into alchemy / enchanting. I don't even know where I'd find the rules for such things. Would that just be the core book or street room one?
Just I have an idea for what Boxer might.
Well, go ahead and talk Paul's ear off about it.
Working at...
You're going to go work at the clinic?
Yep. Kaylee's take a shift there.
It's been a while since you worked at Kaylee's clinic. And you've sort of made a habit, if I understand right, you've made a habit of participating in sort of the neighborhood watch for your block, for your neighborhood, you know, taking care of the people and keeping an eye out, which is one of the reasons why you're friends with Vicente. You know, you share a common interest. He's from the neighborhood as well, so he respects your engagement there. So you're going to go talk to Doc Kaylee and do a couple of shifts there.
Yeah.
When you do a shift at...
No compensation expected.
When you do a shift there, what does that usually entail?
Well, she has medical experience. Let's see.
So are you acting as a nurse or...
Yeah, a nurse.
Or are you... Because you're probably not acting as a doctor, but maybe you're like a nurse practitioner? Is that sort of how you picture yourself there?
Something like that, yeah. There's already a doctor in the house.
Yeah, so Kaylee's obviously happy to see you and happy to have your help. If I remember right, is she an orc?
Yeah, she's an orc.
You spend a couple of days working at Dr. Lorraine's street clinic and basically assisting her Vicente comes in at some point and makes it a point to pull you aside and say, he says to you, "Hey, Boxer, I don't know if you've heard, we're having a little trouble in the neighborhood recently."
Trouble like?
There's some people poking around. They were acting a little, I don't know. They've got something against, I don't know. There might be humanist types. Unfortunately, I've been really busy with work. I haven't had a chance to really look into it, but I hear they've been harassing people who aren't, you know, sort of normative humans.
I'll deal with some. I don't suppose you have locations where they tend to...
I haven't really heard a whole lot, and I haven't really pinned it down to any particular person or location. It's just lately I've been getting some complaints, some feedback from the neighbors from the neighborhood saying, you know, claiming that there's been some bad blood between humans and metas, and not even necessarily humans and metas, but just people, something, there's been sort of a rash of people going around sort of stirring up bad blood between, well, like I said, not normative, he sort of shrugs a little bit embarrassedly, normative, you know, human people, no offense. I'm not sure exactly how to say it.
Should ask your wife. I'm sure she has plenty to say about it, but...
He looks sheepish and says, "Ouch. All right. Yeah, I'd appreciate if you'd look into it."
I'll deal with it. Don't you worry. Just give me those names. The ones who complained. They should be able to get me some info.
Oh, yeah. I can do that. Let me go pull the reports and I'll get back to you.
Yeah.
Other than that, your couple of days that you spend at Doc Lorraine's is... you know, sort of actually pretty soothing for you and relaxing. Helps you get your mind off things, you know, sort of see the people on the street again, reconnect with some of them that you've known for a couple of years now. And, you know, everybody's glad to see you and you're glad to see them. So you come out of the this couple of days feeling a deeper connection to your neighborhood. And at some point, Vicente does get back to you and... you sort of almost get the sense that he's been avoiding you. He feels like he's, you know, that last awkward exchange sort of might have been a bit awkward, so he might be avoiding you a little bit. But he forwards you a list of names of people who have sort of complained to him about these humanist types that are making the rounds here in Auburn. And in that time also, Curie gets back to you, and he says, "Oi, cat girl.
That's me.
Hey, I got that stuff you're looking for."
Excellent.
All right, we'll have to meet. This will be in person since it's been a while, and I'd like to see your face again and have a word about a couple of things that interest myself and a couple of other people. So
not one of your associates?
Right. I say, so if you've got time in the new yen, let's meet up. There's this stuffer shack that I like to frequent. They've got some lovely Pop-Tarts.
I want Pop-Tarts now.
Pop-Tarts.
How about this tonight? Around, call it 2300.
All right.
He drops you a pin on the comm. Don't worry too much about the fact that his accent seems to shift around too much. You never know with these types.
I'll be there.
All right. What else is Grace doing aside from trying to figure out why she's not showing up on the Tridcasts? If she's hanging out with Boxer, there's a good chunk of time in which Boxer isn't available or isn't around as she's helping out at the clinic, the local clinic.
I was going to say it might be worth it to start looking for a magical group to initiate with.
All right, so Boxer spent some time at the clinic and she got some unwelcome news from her pal Vicente. In that time, so what was Grace's motivation in saying that she wanted to find a magical group? So is Grace just trying to find a deeper connection to the magic of the sixth world, or what's her motivation?
Honestly, that is an incredibly good motivation. Studying magic, both the magical practices of Six Worlders, while also learning more about magic and getting connections in Seattle's Awakened community, the deeper, shadowy part of said community, but still.
How is Grace going about trying to find...
Naturally, I will reach out to Greg.
And Greg is...
He is a talismonger.
Oh, yeah. Good idea. Describe Greg to us.
So Greg is like... Hold on, let me look at his contact. I remember finding him incredibly hilarious. Okay, so Greg, to connection, to loyalty. Okay. He is a... I imagine him in my head as like a very like prissy, but not like a high class white guy with like slicked back hair. He's on the younger end, but he's not like a 20 something. He's very new agey, you know, mm-hmm. And he's utterly fascinated with the horse. And
he tries to keep her to himself, sort of in a way that, you know, so that he can keep her power to himself.
Her power.
You know, I imagine he doesn't want to share. He wants to be mysterious about it.
Would he communicate this if she was like, hey, Greg?
Oh, no. He would definitely not communicate that to you. He would treat you, you know,
like I'm
as
stupid.
No, not even that. He would probably, you know, treat you as an equal with a whole lot of, you know, overt, flamboyant respect.
Oh God, I can imagine it.
While at the same point in time not sharing his source of information about you with anybody, while, you know, talking a lot about his contacts, his magical extraplanar contacts.
So basically he's like, they're like source, and he's like, I know a guy.
Yep, pretty much.
I know
a guy. Much more dude. Mysterious than that.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
I can't tell you exactly. But I can tell you that I have been in contact with some extra planar beings. And let me tell you, your premises is absolutely false. That's him.
I want to punch him.
Yeah, so do I. Wait, I'm punching myself. Stop.
No, Paul! And then he's just like out. He's fucking dead. Fucking sprawled out.
You killed him.
So you get in touch with Greg.
Yeah, I'm gonna shoot him a text, and I'm gonna say, hey, Greg, I have things to ask about free emoji.
Greg calls you by Grace?
Mm-hmm. He would know me as Grace.
All right. He texts you back pretty much immediately. You're like the greatest source of meaning in his life.
That implies a way higher loyalty. Holy shit.
Yeah. What's his loyalty?
His loyalty is 2.
All right, bump it up to 3. Why not? That's the benefit of role-playing these things.
Yeah, there you go. His loyalty is now 3.
And he answers back immediately, Grace, what can I do for you?
Would he, like, call me? Is he that kind of person who you message and he immediately calls you?
Actually, probably. That sounds exactly right. So you text him, and you immediately get a call back.
Grace, like, picks it up, but she does that thing where, like, it's a video call, but she's pointing the camera at the ceiling. And she says, hi, Greg. I have some questions about the Awakened community in Seattle.
I'm so happy you contacted me. I really enjoy our chats. It's so wonderful, this connection that we always have. I feel like... You know, we're always right on the cusp of discovering something great together. You're so special to me.
I'm actually working on that. So I've been spending the last year, as you know, studying metahuman society. And by and large, metahumans are mundane. As a note, Greg is mundane himself. He is not magical in any way.
And at the same time, as you say that, he sort of makes a scoffing sound, like, yeah, those plebes.
And while it has certainly conferred boons upon me that I possess a talent that most of metahumanity can't even really comprehend.
You're so special.
Yes, I'm very special. But I'm interested in meeting more awakened metahuman.
Oh, I can help you with that. Mm-hmm. Just Leave that to me. I have the contacts. I know people. Grace, my dear friend, I will find the right people for you.
Could you give me their number?
I think it would be better if we met in person. I feel like we should have a more personal contact.
I want to judge intentions on this. We need to meet in person. I can't give you their numbers.
You can make a judge intentions. Since you are working over the phone, you're going to do that with a -2 modifier.
That's concerning. I rolled a 2.
Yeah, you are concerned, but you think that he is probably unwilling to give up control of the relationship that he has with you.
I suppose we could meet in person. I'm interested in doing some alchemy and enchanting, and I don't really have the tools for that. That wasn't my expertise whenever I was studying at the School of Magic back home.
Oh, fantastic. Yes, I will absolutely find you the best people for that.
I was more thinking Sixth World Hermetic Resources as opposed to tutors.
No, I know people. Grace, let me tell you, I know the best people.
The best people. The absolute best.
Everybody says so.
It's gonna be great. It's gonna be huge.
It's gonna be huge.
Thank you, Greg. When will you be available to meet then?
Let me make some calls, Grace, and I will furnish a time and a place that's gonna be spectacular, Grace. You're gonna meet the best kind of people, the people who have the contacts. Let me tell you, I am so connected. I will make sure that you learn, you get everything that you need from the Sixth World, Grace.
Okay, Greg, thank you. I'll see you when I see you.
Grace, you will hear from me very soon, and please, if you ever need anything, don't hesitate to get in touch with me.
I will keep that in mind. I'll reach out more. I've just been kind of busy as of late. Very busy.
Yes, it's saddened me that we have not been able to speak more often.
Mm-hmm. Oh, also, whenever we're gonna meet, do you think you could get me some chocolate milk?
Of course.
Thank you.
You would like some real milk, of course, naturally.
Yes.
Not that soy stuff.
No.
So déclassé. Well, in any case,
anyway,
it's been wonderful talking to you, Grace, and I am so appreciative of you thinking of me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Greg.
Goodbye, Grace. He signs off.
Bye. She picks her phone up. And she does that quick thing where she just confirms that the call actually ended.
Yep, it's ended, and geez, you can make another judge intentions roll if you want.
The -2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Greg is by far one of the stranger characters that you feel like you've met in the Sixth, bar none. His fascination with you and his attraction to you is, well, probably unhealthy.
Oh God, I have a fan club of one.
It's coming from a place of intense ego, or maybe insecurity.
I'm aware of this, I presume.
Yep, like he feels like you're making him relevant in the scene.
I feel like if I can find someone through Greg, like I could probably get that like -2. You know, like I could get that attitude in a more healthy way and have more resources. So basically,
which is exactly why he wants to meet in person, so he can control it. So he's not going to give you the number and let you just talk to somebody on their own.
Oh my God, but like as soon as I meet up with whatever fucking awakened clown he's gonna show me to, we're gonna go high speed and start talking over MindNet or something, and he's just gonna be fucking butted out of the conversation.
Ah, poor Greg.
That's hilarious. I love this. I love this.
Alright.
Okay. That's my thing.
Boxer. Here he calls you back. Or he already called you back, that's right. And you set up a meet.
Yeah.
Are you taking Grace with you?
There's safeties in numbers, boxers.
Before you answer, let me ask you guys and both of you together a different question. So what's going on? Grace and Fox are hanging out a lot. How do you guys feel about each other? What's causing you to spend so much time together?
Foxer is genuinely pleasant company. She has a very distinct worldview and set of skills from mine. I just find her pleasant to be around. And I definitely feel safer than I probably would if, say, I was staying with Jake or Greg or anyone else in town. Like that elf. That elf really uneases me. I don't like the elf. Not because she's a bad person. It's just like something makes a con... Like, imagine something making a constant static. Just looking at it is hard. Yeah, exactly.
So it's her... Because she's not magically active.
It's the opposite. She's the opposite. She's... To Grace, I imagine, it's almost like she's... It's almost like she's dead matter, but she's not. She's a person. There's animation in what should be nothing.
Would you say that you attribute that to Deandra's glamour? Because her glamour is very odd to you. It's not something innately, or it's not something overtly magical that Deandra has control over, yet there is something arcane about it.
It's like, it's a very thin, like very thin threads of magic that intersperse all across her skin and her external being. But besides that, in the astral, she's like almost a void. She's like gray, if that makes sense. Which gray is typically like, not technology, but like rocks, you know?
Mm-hmm.
With like little strips of color that is her glamour. And altogether, especially because it's a thing that talks to her and moves around and... I think at least once has actually touched her, which I didn't roleplay it out how fucking disturbing that would be, but she doesn't like being around her, is the point. It's outside of her worldview, her understanding.
But she appreciates Boxer because Boxer's calm and has a grounded worldview.
Yeah. Once she got over the whole animal discord thing.
Animal discord as in the sense that because Boxer is anthropomorphic?
No, Boxer, she disturbs animals. How do I put this? She puts them on edge. It's a magical thing. But she agrees the rare thing.
What we agreed upon some time ago is that Grace initially was really unnerved by Boxer because while all metahumans are predators, and Grace has dealt with predators before, you know, because she lived out...
Is that the critter spook quality?
Critter spook, yeah. I don't know why animal discord. Oh, because of fucking Cataclysm Dark Days Ahead. That's where it came from. Yeah, critter spook. Her critter spook quality.
Nice, okay.
She's very much aware that Boxer is a predator, and like, at least initially, Boxer laying her eyes on Grace was like, it sent her into fight or flight, I imagine. And she persevered through that out of pure interest in Boxer, because she hadn't met changelings up to that point.
I think you would be having a lot of that same reaction anytime you're around any of the main character NPCs from the Samovar.
That very uncomfortable, oh my goodness, this is something that wants to eat me.
Yep, you're like being in the presence of apex predators.
Yeah, I could see that being a thing. With Boxer, it's something that she's become accustomed to by, yeah, just being around her. Them, he's always on edge.
Yeah, so even Prokop, who has a very personable kind of manner towards everybody, when you look at that aura and the psyche around him, he's the same as the two women whose name I've forgotten now because it's late. All right, but in any case, so we've heard why Grace is hanging out, or appreciates hanging out with Boxer. So, Boxer, what is your motivation when you hang out with Grace?
For one thing, it's someone who's not really going to look at her differently on account of changeling. I mean, at first she did, but she got over it. You know, she sees her as a person, actually a person, whereas most people kind of dimly register animal ? In addition to that, she's definitely the member of the sorority that she likes best. See, We don't even need to talk about Cecile. But, Deandra is also, for one thing, new, but also, she's not a super big fan of her attitude, whereas Grace is just very affable, I guess.
Grace is just happy to be alive. She is
She's a happy little critter. What else? She's also just, well, aside from being a member of an in-group, and she still retains a very strong sense of one of my people.
Yeah, that's sort of my take too, is Boxer's probably very team-oriented, so once there's sort of even the most superficial trappings of a team, like what you have currently, Boxer probably immediately develops a certain type of team loyalty.
Yeah, you got it right.
Like, Grace is part of the team, therefore, you know, it's basically like family almost.
Yeah, pretty much.
Whether you like them or not, you're sort of tied to them.
Yeah, like family.
All right, so the date and time comes around for your meeting with Curie at the Stuffer Shack. It's located in Auvern, but a fairly remote eastern part of Auvern that you're not quite familiar with. Are you taking Grace with you?
She would have talked about it with Grace. Like, she would have mentioned it. This is a thing I'm doing. If Grace feels the need to come, well, she can say so. Otherwise, she's not even going to think about taking her.
Her safety is in numbers. Hey. I don't want you to go. It sounds like something that you could get hurt if you went alone. And I know that obviously I can't be there as a presence. But I can't really back you up. But it would be good just in case, you know?
I mean, if you want to stay out there, be my guest. But you do understand it's rather late of a meeting.
I know.
Are you guys going to take the van or do you want to take the bike?
Oh, she's taking the bike. She hasn't gotten to use it as much as she wanted.
So does Grace get in the sidecar or does she fall in the van?
Oh, there's no sidecar. If Grace wants on, she's going to have to hold her.
That's right. That's Deandre's bike.
Grace is fine with this. She'll,
Are you going to mask or change your appearance or are you going to go as yourself?
I mean, if it's in the middle of the night, I don't know if I'd immediately cast any spells. Just like, I don't know, cover up my face and stuff, and like wear my actual helmet to tie all of my mane back. Once we actually get to a stopping point, I may cast masking.
To what extent does Grace even understand the purpose of this trip?
It's to buy tactical equipment, of course, right?
Yep.
Yeah, that's a big reason why she's kind of concerned. She has limited experience with, people who sell firearms and stuff. But Jake isn't exactly the most unusual, and he also isn't the best example of, yeah.
All right, so you guys head off through the night. You know that you're really familiar with Auvern, Boxer. I'm not going to have Boxer roll for driving because she's in familiar territory and there's no stress.
Also, I think, yep, she has home ground, so it's like she's especially comfy here.
Grace, you're impressed by Boxer's skill and acumen with the motorcycle. She smoothly is guiding it through the traffic, finding a very direct route. You quickly pull up to in a parking lot of a Stuffer Shack. All the Stuffer Shacks look the same, especially to Grace. But there are a couple of vehicles and motorcycles parked in front of the Stuffer Shack. Both of you make a perception check.
I am fortunately trying to three. Oh, also, I think it might be important to say, in the middle of the city, living things like really stick out in the astral. I don't know if that'll affect you at all.
Yeah, so, you're seeing, as you pull up, you see there are a couple of motorcycles pulled up, and there are a couple of metahumans leaning against their motorcycles, smoking and talking. You identify them immediately as elves. Boxer, you basically see a standard Stuffer Shack. Do either of you have any kind of gang knowledge?
I do, actually. I just realized I haven't updated my knowledge. Fortunately, that's old skills.
I also have area knowledge, Seattle, and shadow community, if those apply at all.
Either both of you recognize the motorcycles that are pulled up as having the colors of the ancients, and the metas that are leaned up against them talking. The meta type, they're elves. They don't seem to be paying you any attention. There is a GMC Bulldog and a couple of other vehicles pulled up there that don't have any kind of either gang colors or corp logos on them. But nobody really seems to be paying you guys any specific attention.
That is the place. I don't suppose you recognize them?
Yeah, they're go-go cookers from out of town.
You need to be careful. In fact, is she invisible or otherwise?
I imagine what it looks like probably is that there's just a dog wearing a cape. It's the witchy dog, but it's Grace, actually. I don't know how dark Seattle is at night. Like, are the street lamps annoyingly bright?
Yeah, they're pretty annoyingly bright, and the lights from the Stuffer Shack are shining out to the parking lot, sort of bathing everything in a multicolored glow.
Yeah, it probably makes sense as they're approaching. Boxer would probably tell her to, because Boxer is very smart. She'd cast invisibility on herself. I'm gonna do that.
The ancients sort of pause in their conversation as you pass by them, Boxer, and give you a look, and then just go back to talking with amongst themselves without any further attention to yourself. What are you doing?
She's going, well, did he specify a place within the Stuffer Shack?
No, he just said the Stuffer Shack. He said he was familiar with, it was something about the Stuffer Shack that he was in.
She's looking for the shitty, creamy food.
All right, so you're going in. You push your way in, and you actually give me a reaction plus intuition test. Okay, so Boxer has the wherewithal and the presence of mind as she's opening the door to hold it open just a tad longer to allow Grace to enter without having to like bump open the door on her own. And you enter the Stuffer Shack. It's, you know, your standard sort of Stuffer Shack layout. You've been in a million Stuffer Shacks. These are all the same. The clerk is standing behind thick macroplast, armor-plated, you know, could probably take a freaking, you know, small cannon shell before it breaks. He's watching you guys, and when he sees you enter, he's a young orc. He's not wearing any kind of, he's wearing a Stuffer Shack uniform. He motions you over. He sort of does a little beckoning motion with his right hand towards Boxer.
Yes.
All right, chummer.
Yeah,
looking for anything in special or anyone in special? He sort of cocks an eye at you.
I'm looking for pop tarts, as a matter of fact.
Pop tarts. All right. I got pop tarts for you. He sort of motions over. They're waiting for you in the back.
All right. Thank you.
So in the back is a, you see a, there's a door between the vending machines. It says, you know, authorized personnel only. And, you go through?
Yes.
And Grace, what are you doing? There's a couple of young orcs hanging out, shooting, playing some kind of video games, not paying any attention to anything. So
it depends entirely if the people in the room are magically active or not. She'd peek between Boxer's legs before deciding to go in or not.
There is literally nobody in this room magically active.
In the back room?
Oh, the back room. That's a different story. So in the back room, there are three people in the back room, and they're all elves, and one of them is definitely magically active and magically perceived.
So if I peek through that doorway, are they liable to notice me?
Quite likely.
She would have done that and then immediately regretted it.
Boxer obviously isn't seeing any of this, and Boxer is going on through the door.
She has a bit more of a presence than the pawnee.
She's not invisible, and she's also not really magically active, and she's there to meet somebody. So, Grace, are you following Boxer into the room?
Nightingale peeks into the room. She sees that one of the metahumans inside is currently dual-natured, as in they can see into the astral. And then she tries to just duck back, like against the side of the door frame. I imagine she like peeked in from the corner of the bottom corner of the door, basically.
All right. So make a quick, just make a reaction test.
Hello. Zero.
Well, that's not good.
At least it wasn't a glitch.
All right. You don't think they noticed you, actually. They were looking at Boxer, mainly.
I imagine. I would be so low that the door might actually cover where I was. So I'm not going in that room. I think I'm just going to sit here and listen to the metahumans out there.
There's like I said, there are three or four, call it four young orcs, males playing some video games, some trid games, you know, shouting at each other and, you know, sort of acting in the manner that young meta males do when they're competing against each other.
I presume there is some point that they begin to argue about how you're supposed to wipe your ass. God bless America.
You know, they start arguing with each other about who would wipe their ass with whom, so.
Oh, are they going to close the door?
The door did close behind Boxer.
Okay, I'm going to cast Clairvoyance. Yeah, so that'll be a minus two to the spellcasting test. Just enough so that I can peek through the wall. But, like, a low peek. In a way that I can reason out that person wouldn't notice. I think the range would be enough for me to actually snake it around to look behind them.
Yeah, they're really close to you. I mean, it's not a big room, and they're basically focused on Boxer at this point.
Yeah, okay. So in that case, cast it force 2, and then I just have 2 drain. There you go. And now I can send the little camera to go around, and I'll peek back at it occasionally just to make sure she's all right.
Boxer, you walk into the room, you see Curie, and you've met Curie in person before?
Yes.
Okay, so
just one.
You see Curie and 2 other elves. They're all clad, they're all dressed in black leather, and they look relatively similar. Curie's got his standard slick back blonde hair, and the other 2 have their hair slicked back as well, accentuating their sort of austere elven features. And Curie's face sort of lights up when he sees you. Oi, Chama, good to see you. Didn't know whether you'd show up or not.
Well, I do have some merchandise I'd like.
Yeah, it's been a while. I didn't know if our business was a one-time thing or not.
Oh, no, I do intend to give you plenty of business.
Right. I like to hear it. So, you're looking for some grenades, some boom-boom, and a little bit of a jammer-jammer. I've got just what you need.
Do you know?
How many of these boom-boom eggs would you like, then? He reaches under the desk and pulls up a little sort of suitcase kind of thing and opens it up and spins it around for you and looks at you questioningly.
I will be needing 10 fragmentation grenades.
Right. He rubs his hands together. I like to hear it. Let's do some business. There's 10 right there. Little death eggs they are.
Indeed.
So you've got some fireworks planned, eh?
Oh, I just like having them on hand now.
Yeah.
That jammer. I assume you got what I needed.
All right.
Maybe you have a selection.
Jake, show the lady the jammer. the elf next to him, sort of a larger, more muscular elf than sort of the standard elf, puts a box on, smiles faintly, and puts a box up on the desk and opens it up. And you see inside of the foam padding, you see a little black box with some green lights on it. And Curie says, there you go. She's a beaut, ain't she?
Oh, I agree. And that is graded for usage of 2. What did I put it at? I think it was rating 5. Yeah. I don't know how to say that in the universe. I assume that's rated up to signal 5.
Right, she is.
Aren't you a magician?
Yes, there is. I've got contacts all over the city. So, you know, you ever need any more gear like this, I'm happy to help.
Well, maybe I will. In any event,
just call this an introduction, then. I didn't know that this is going to be a two-way street, then.
You didn't guide just far and forget, did you?
Well, you know, we bought some odd items off of you before, but this is interesting. This is new.
It's business. Now, payment.
That's right.
I've got it in credits.
Market value?
Well, a credit stick.
Oh, I'm not going to charge it over market value right now. This is an introductory rate. Next time we'll see what the market bears.
Oh, so what? You're giving me a discount?
You know, I'm not charging you.
Fair enough.
I want to see where this goes. Aren't you interested in this?
Well, if you see it on the news, I'll have done something wrong.
Well, I'd rather not see it on the news, obviously, but, you know, if that's how you roll, then that's how we'll deal with it.
You won't know it's me, but, well...
Oh, I'll know it's you, Lassie. Believe me.
Maybe you will, in any event.
He rubs his hand together in a sort of a odd sense of glee.
Your payment, and I don't suppose you can bag this for me. It is rather illegal.
You can take the case.
Why, thank you. How big is the jammer anyway?
It's not big. It's probably like the size of a cell phone.
She takes her merchandise and slips into her backpack merchandise, and she hands off the cred stick.
He does sort of a fake tip of the hat to you, and as he checks the cred stick, and he says, "Oi, pleasure doing business with you."
The pleasure is all mine, Cody.
Wow, this is an interesting turn of events, Oxa. I look forward to seeing what we take on next.
I may have merchandise for you, depending on how it goes.
Or I'd like to hear it.
Indeed.
It's always good making new friends.
I'll be going now. Indeed. A pleasure doing business with you.
He reaches out a hand to you.
She takes it.
And he gives you a nice firm handshake and a grin and again does the sort of the fake tip of the hat thing, and the other two elves that are with him sort of nod to you, and your business is concluded with Curie.
She leaves. He goes that nice confident walk.
Before she leaves, whenever I realize the deal is like coming to an end, I kind of want to pull a prank on those orcs playing their game.
Okay.
I want to like go up to one and just whisper poopy head and then just back off and see what the hell happens.
All right. So you find one. Are you looking at for one in particular for any particular characteristics?
Maybe the one that's been like talking the most shit. I mean, sorry, Drek. Talking the most Drek.
The one that's talking the most Drek is naturally the physically the largest and imposing specimen. From his aura, you also deduce probably not necessarily the brightest of the group. So you sidle up to him, and are you going to make any kind of sneaking test?
Yeah, she's trying to be careful. She doesn't want him to realize that, well, at least not exactly where she is, so he could just, like, decide he's going to swing his fist out at her, preferably. I have stealth grip.
Nice. All right, so give us a stealth check.
Would invisibility give me a modifier?
Absolutely. That'll give you +4.
Oh, wow.
Holy crap. All right. So you sneak up to him, being careful to keep your hooves from flippity-clopping on you're next to him, and you're looking into the trid screen as him and his gang are sort of, you know, shooting each other up in this maze of glowing blocks. And he's talking smack, calling the other Drek heads and, you know, how they're too slow and get good and all that kind of stuff. What do you do?
I'm going to rear up. I'm going to lean in as much as I feel safe. And I'm just going to say, "Poopy head." And then immediately fall back down and backpedal.
He's relatively tall, even for a troll, so make an agility test.
Oh no. Just agility? Agility plus edge.
Agility 3, sure. Agility plus edge. Why not?
2.
You hit. You rear up. Your hoof almost grazes his shoulder as you lean forward, but you manage to pull it back just in time. And you whisper in his ear,
"Poopy head."
He suddenly looks around. "What the frog?" And in that moment, somebody sneaks up behind him and knifes him in the game. He's like, "Crack! Who are the frag? Which one of you fraggers did that?"
And she's poor frag now.
Freaking mage poop heads whispering in my ear, "I'm gonna get you." That's not gonna stand. And he's sort of punching the macro class shielding on the trid screen. He's cursing, but you get away with it. And he's You see the other orcs are sort of sniggering, laughing, and one of them says, "Ha ha!" And next thing you know, a big fight breaks out over there, and they're all sort of jumping in, and soy burgers are flying around, and the clerk comes out from behind the screen and fires off a shotgun shell.
Oh my God!
Boxer, make a reaction test.
Oh, what the fuck? I think I need to make a composure test.
Boxer, you're coming out, and you suddenly see a scuffle among some young orc, you know, wannabe ganger types who are playing some trid games over in the corner, and they start yelling and then start fighting. One of the bigger ones has got one of the smaller ones and is shaking him, saying, "Freaking magic fingers, you gotta quit that shit, that dreck." And next thing you know, you see the clerk stepping out of the armored shielding of the stuffer shack. He's got a shotgun in his hand. He fires off a round. It's obviously a blank or some kind of concussion grenade type thing, and it just sort of bangs, and the younger orcs scatter. Do you make any kind of, do you react to this in any way, Boxer?
Yeah, she's going for a gun. Let's have it.
Yep, so you reach behind and grab your pistol. What is your pistol again?
The Colt Government 2066.
Yeah, you've got a special sidearm, right?
Yep, the one, if you remember, from the old group.
So you reach around and you realize, this is just, there's no direct threat to you right now. Yeah. You've got the pistol and you've got the butt in your hand. You're about to draw and you realize, I'm not really under any kind of threat here.
And she just lets herself relax, draws away from it. Fuck, that is fucking terrible firearm safety.
Grace is terrified and she feels terrible about what she just did. She probably screamed whenever the shotgun went off.
Locker can try and pinpoint her by that.
Yeah, Boxer, you can make a roll.
Of what, though?
Reaction and intuition. 9 dice.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. You hear a little yelp.
Yeah, she's gonna go comfort horse. Or rather, she's gonna...
The horse is invisible.
Well, I was trying to find her by sound. By the sound of her squeak.
You did find her. I'm not sure if you want to necessarily expose her by...
Yeah, true. She's not going to go over there. She's just going to look pointedly.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a kerfuffle. The clerk goes back into his armored cage, and the orcs break it up and resume playing with a couple of snide remarks to each other about, you know, getting glasses and...
My God, this sixth world is hell.
Sixth world is hell. And... Grace, you're dismayed by the amount of disharmony.
I must bring harmony to this world.
You were always, you know, you might have been a rebel back in Equestria, but now that you've come to the sixth world, you probably have a sense of longing for the harmony of Equestria.
She didn't agree with everything back home, but people didn't act like that. I think she's going to go for the door before she starts hyperventilating. And that means she's going to push the door open by herself and scoot. Boxer will probably be right on her heels.
Boxer, you've got the crate, you've got 10 frag grenades and the jammer, and you're a little bit light on cred at this point now.
Later.
All right, so out of curiosity, after that little fracas, are you guys changing up your routine? Is Boxer still working at the clinic? Is Grace going anywhere, doing anything different?
For one thing, immediately after Boxer's giving the horse some cuddles, because she needs it, poor horse, poor baby. Boxer's definitely getting into her games, as she does, which I'm sure Grace minds. Not disturbing, so she does it in VR, kind of just slumps down on her bed. Though she is kind enough to set up a hollow projector, fancy, to let her watch if she cares to.
I think she definitely would.
Is Grace at all confused about whether or not it's real or not?
I don't think she...
I think that things like these probably existed in Equestria. She definitely understands the concept of a simulated reality. She may not know that it's like there's not like an actual physical process going on that makes all of this possible. She may not realize that, but she knows that it's not real like she or Boxer's bodies are.
You spend a little bit of time. There's a day or two that's quiet. Boxer spends some time at the clinic, and Gray spends some time out and about, sort of exploring the sixth world in Auburn.
Of the thing that you asked me to do, like something specific, I think I want to go and poke around like abandoned or closed properties somewhere in Seattle, presumably relatively close to the safe house that I've been staying in with Boxer.
So you guys are in Auburn at the moment. Auburn is sort of an industrial heart of Seattle. There's a specific phenomena that's actually associated with Auburn called the Auburn hum. And it's just this industrial background noise.
Sounds terrible.
Yeah, it's not necessarily the best place. So compared to a place like Bellevue or Everett or Snohomish, it's pretty grim.
Bellevue, the rich and rich place.
There's a lot of abandoned homes, I presume.
There's some abandoned properties, both industrial and residential. There might be some abandoned sort of tenement buildings that are sort of just occupied by street people, and you know, there might be some abandoned industrial areas where there are sort of warehouses that are no longer used that you could explore.
Yeah, that's what she wants to do. Also, I'm not sure if this is in the rules, because I don't see them in the reagents list, but I was thinking it might be interesting if at least a kind of reagent for, obviously not the only one, but a kind of reagent for Grace would be, like, artifacts, if that makes sense. Obviously, whenever you use a reagent, it doesn't do anything to it physically or, like, in terms of the psychic impressions left on it. It just is no longer capable of being used as a reagent, right? I think that might be of something of value. One of the examples I came up with, which would be like an old mechanical alarm clock, mm-hmm. that someone in the early 21st century used to wake up every day for like their entire life.
Yeah, so you go poking around an old warehouse area. Are you taking Boxer with you?
She's doing her job, so no, I'd probably tell her what I'm doing. Honestly, it would make sense to summon a spirit just to have in my back pocket while I'm doing this today. So I'm going to do that. Force 3 spirit of fire with the accident power, optional power. So where is it? Conjuring group. So that's a 3, and then it rolls against me with its force. 3d6, and the number of hits it gets, I take that drain times 2. So that's
2 hits.
So that's 4 drain. Wait, how do I... Oh, yeah, you're right. Thank you for reminding me. Oh, I don't take any drain, because I'm just that good.
Nice. Alright, so you locate a sort of a small complex of industrial buildings that pique your interest, just because they're abandoned or appear to be abandoned. You enter through a break in a chain link fence and begin scouting the area. What are you looking for specifically?
She, among like artifacts that have cultural, personal, or magical significance, she also wants documents, just any kind of documentation. I know that those are fairly rare in the sixth world, like paper documents, but yeah.
You make your way into what appears to be, so it's a warehouse. It's a large, rather inexpensively built building. It's abandoned. It's gray and grimy, both physically and in the astral. But you do see that there is a portion at one end that seems to be a little bit more interesting on the astral. You make your way there. It's obviously where the administrative tasks were taken care of. It's an office area, and you see that there are implements and tools and desks where people worked that had some connection to this. Make a test.
What kind of test?
Let's see. How about logic and intuition?
Okay.
Yeah, so this little area where there are, in the physical realm, you see, you know, desks and spaces where probably some kind of computational technology was arranged. It's been abandoned for a while, but you see the lingering traces of people's emotional attachment, or meta-humans' emotional attachment. And you do quickly, as you use your telekinesis, psychokinesis, to pull open some drawers, you find a couple of scraps of documentation and, you know, quickly scribbled notes on small pieces of paper. And you find a couple of reagents, you know, things that you could use as reagents.
I assume these would be all raw.
These would all be raw reagents. They would need to be processed. They have enough significance. They have enough emotional attachment associated with them. Even though it's been many years ago, it's sort of faded. But there's enough there where you could potentially process them if you wanted to.
Okay.
And,
or do you want me to roll for that?
Roll 2d6. And then roll initiative.
Fuck. Oh, no.
Okay, so you find 9 items that will count as raw reagents.
I also have to roll half of my initiative. I don't remember if I roll up or down. I guess round up? I think that's generally the roll. There you go. So my initiative is 5. Grace.
You roll 10, right?
But divide in half because of combat paralysis. I love the crusty just Grace, lowercase g.
As you're collecting the devices and pieces of scraps and fragments, you suddenly realize that you're not alone in the room. So you're poking through some drawers and you're pulling out some papers with your psychokinesis. And as you come around one of the desks, you disturb a large rodent of some kind. Not something that Grace has seen before. And because of this, she is at first more intrigued by it than alarmed by it.
And then it like spits fucking acid on her.
It's relatively large. I mean, it's the size of a small dog.
Oh no. In comparison to Grace, that's like a big dog.
Grace's initial reaction to it is one of curiosity, but that only really lasts a split second as she realizes, viewing in the astral, that this creature is both alarmed and threatened by her presence. And she realizes that it does not necessarily have the intellectual capacity to reason with, and that it is indeed attacking her.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it's necessarily terribly damaging.
I mean, she doesn't know that. That thing looks pretty scary.
It's pretty scary. I mean, it's sort of a hairless rodent the size of a small-sized, medium-sized dog. It lunges at her and attempts to bite her with some very large canines. So it's going to roll its combat skill plus agility and modifiers. And you're going to do, for your defense test, you have the option of parry, which would be a weapon skill plus reaction. You can do a block action, which is unarmed combat plus reaction, or you can do dodge, which is dodge plus reaction. So all three of your defense tests are reaction plus either weapon, unarmed combat, or dodge.
Dodge is its own skill, yes.
Dodge plus reaction, block is unarmed combat plus reaction.
What was the other one?
Parry is a weapon skill plus reaction. So if you had like any kind of melee weapon skill.
I don't appear to. I guess I'm going to have to dodge, which means I have 3 die.
This creature lunges at you.
Oh, shit.
And manages to sort of, it looks like it's about to try to sink its teeth into one of your legs. So it gets 1, 2, 3, 4 hits. All right, so you got a success versus the devil rat's 4 successes. So it got 3 net successes. It did 4 damage value, 1p4. So it did 4 physical.
This is a dangerous rat.
It is a very dangerous rat. You resist that with your body plus armor. Is that that's your roll there?
There you go. So I got
2 hits?
Yeah.
Yeah, you take 2 physical damage. As this thing sort of lunges forward as you're sort of distracted trying to pick up these documents and put them in your backpack, it lunges forward and grabs a hold of your leg, of your right foreleg. And sinks its teeth into you to the point where you're actually bleeding. And the aura in the astral, as you're seeing it, is one of both fear and intimidation and a feeling of protecting its domain.
Well, she is... it's not, like, mechanically grappling her, right?
No.
Okay, well, she's going to shake it out off of her leg and then immediately go to cast Levitate on herself.
Okay.
I believe the... God, she only got one effective force, didn't take any drain from it. But even just one effective force would be fast enough for her to, like, while she starts backpedaling, to just tick up off of the ground. And she's floating what should be out of its reach, unless it can, like, jump or fly or levitate.
Right. No, you levitate yourself up and out of its reach, and it's sort of hissing and snarling at you down the floor. What other actions do you take against it, if any?
She just wants to get those documents, with, like, her psychokinesis, and then get out. She doesn't care.
You snatch up the documents, and you float right back out onto the street. The rat obviously doesn't follow you. It was just guarding its sort of location,
I imagine.
All right. Later that night, when Boxer gets back from the clinic, you tell her about this situation, this event?
Naturally. There was a rat. It bit me. It was terrible.
A rat? Are you hurt?
Boxer, you see a bandage on Grace's leg.
How bad?
I don't think it was that bad. I did start bleeding, and it kind of freaked me out.
Do you examine it? You want to do a medical test?
That bandage, are we going to treat that as, like, her having done first aid?
No, that's just fluff. I would imagine that Grace has basically done something to staunch the bleeding. And you can do a medicine test at this point.
Yeah, she's going to do a medical check.
Yeah, it seems like she's taken a wound on her front leg. You can't quite tell simply because you're unfamiliar with her physiology. But, you know, obviously the skin or the fur has taken damage, and you see the blood, and she seems to have done an adequate job of bandaging herself to staunch the bleeding.
It's a bite.
Yeah, I think it thought I was there to hurt it. It got really angry.
Yeah, that's what animals do when they get cornered.
Yeah.
Make a survival test.
Survival? Okay. Where are you going to survive?
Yeah, it looks like she's been bitten by a devil rat.
What are the effects of that? Is it just, like, a bite, or...?
It's just a bite. But, you know, those things are nasty, and it's a good thing that she didn't encounter a pack of them, because they can be quite, you know... Individually, they're not that bad, but if you meet a pack of them, they can be quite dangerous.
Wait, I recognize this. This is a devil rat. Those things are vicious. How many?
There was only one. I didn't get a good look at it. I don't know if it was male or female, or if it was sick or not. It looked sick to my eye, but I know rats are gross.
It doesn't matter. Honestly, you're lucky to be all right. Look, I'm going to take care of this so it doesn't even get infected. I don't know, but I'm going to apply some antiseptic.
All right, do another medicine roll.
In fact, let me get my kit about it.
Grace is surprisingly not worried about her injury. She knows that she's not going to get sick from it because, what do you call it? Like, she would have gotten very violently sick at this point if she could contract diseases from six world things.
Yeah, you know that you're not going to get sick from it, but you also recognize the fact that Boxer feels the need to take care of you here at this point.
I'm going to let her take care of me. That actually sounds really nice.
The Topps Company, Inc. has sole ownership of the names, logo, artwork, marks, photographs, sounds, audio, video, and/or any proprietary material used in connection with the game Shadowrun. The Topps Company, Inc. has granted permission to the Hard Knock Sorority Podcast to use such names, logos, artwork, marks, and/or any proprietary materials for promotional
and informational purposes on its website, but does not endorse and is not affiliated with the Hard Knocks Sorority Podcast in any official capacity whatsoever.
The music for the Hard Knocks Sorority Podcast was written and performed by Trace Mineral. The Hard Knocks Sorority Podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons License 4.0, meaning you are welcome to use the material as long as you give us credit.